You're so far away. Yeah, you're so far away.
Hi, my name is Mike Steele from Austin, Texas. Yes, I've had a long-distance relationship, and no, it didn't work out. I think the killer was the lack of sharing of our everyday experiences. Explicitly telling someone about them isn't the same as sharing them moment to moment, of course.
The poignant truth about long-distance relationships. They are hard.
Why are you so far away from me?
This is Gil from St. Louis, Missouri. My wife was living in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I in Fayetteville, North Carolina when we met. This lasted for 2 years, and then I moved to Germany, and she joined me 5 months later. We talked on the phone every day while I was in the States, and once per week when we were separated by the Atlantic Ocean. 23 years later, our relationship is still working because we love and trust each other implicitly.
If you have a story to add to Gil and Mike there, we'd love to hear it. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. Interesting, only guys speaking there. Do guys get the better end of the long-distance deal? We know there are a lot more stories out there. It's estimated that more than 3.5 million couples in the U.S. live apart in what are being called commuter marriages. That's double since 1990, and it doesn't even count the old-fashioned, long-distance, unmarried relationships. Anna Sale, host of Death, Sex, and Money, tackles this issue in her latest podcast episode. Anna, welcome.
Hi, John.
So you look at a special case, musicians who live on the road.
That's right. Yes, I talked to Jason Isbell and Amanda Shires. They're husband and wife. They live in Nashville when they're not on the road. Jason just put out a solo album last year called Southeastern that was a big hit before he played with Drive-By Truckers, the Southern rock band. Amanda Shires plays fiddle and writes and sings on her own. So they are sometimes touring together, but often touring apart, particularly now since Jason's career's blown up a little bit.
And how tough is it for them?
Well, that was one of the things that I didn't expect when talking to them was how relatable it was to hear the ways, what their challenges are with being on the road. Listen to how they talk about talking on the phone and how they check in.
I'm bad at it. I have modes, you know, mental modes that I get in. And when I'm on the road, part of me just gets switched off, you know, the part that's very private and very personal and very intimate. That especially, that part of me gets shut off. So I've been trying really hard in the last few months to call that part back up when we're checking in with each other, when we're on the phone to actually, because she feels like she's talking to a robot sometimes, and I understand that.
It's more like a list conversation rather than a conversation.
It's tough. I mean, you have to be guarded. And then, of course, you know, every night he's out there and everyone's, you know, worshiping him, fawning all over him, right?
Well, that's the other thing they talked about. I mean, jealousy can come up in any marriage, in any relationship. But when you're not in the same physical space, you don't know who the other potential, you know, flirting people are.
Hello.
So that's something they talk about.
I think in my mind, you know, I sometimes just ask them or say, you know, have you been talking to any women? Then some days I'm like, whatever he does, I have no control over his actions. And whatever he does or does not do, it's not a reflection on me, you know. It's the choices he makes.
We don't ignore it, mm-hmm. you know. The fact that there are other people mm-hmm. vying for our attention and that you know, when you're on the road, mm-hmm. it makes it easier to think you can get away with stuff like that. We discuss it, you
yeah.
know. If somebody's worried, we talk about it,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, usually if you name something, it becomes a lot less difficult to defeat.
Right.
So were you buying this when you were with them? I mean, they talked seemingly very intimately, but did you get a sense of whether they're stressing as a result of this, or are they pulling together?
Well, I got the sense that it's an everyday stress, but you heard there, this is how we figured out how to deal with it. Amanda says, you know, sometimes I just say, I have limited control here, and I just have to trust him. And then they also, you know, have figured out how to talk about it, that when they feel threatened or afraid, they're just going to say, what's happening on the road? Who are you talking to?
So you think they're going to make it? Did you ask them that point blank?
I think they did say, they said, look, we're doing the best we can. And when you choose a partner that you trust, that's the best you can do. And if you're a grown up, if your heart gets stomped on, you'll survive.
How different do you think it is between relationships that are the expectations are, well, we'll see where this goes, and it's long distance, which is probably the more common notion of a long-distance relationship, versus we're together for life, and we got to go through this difficult period for a few years.
Well, I think that's what I was interested to find out looking at the statistics of increasing long-distance marriages, but from the limited studies there have been, it doesn't look like it's actually more of a predictor of divorce or separation. Mm. So, you know, maybe saying that commitment, we're a lifelong commitment, this is what we're doing, and this is why we're apart. You know, this doesn't just affect high-income musicians. This affects people who have to be separate for economic reasons. Maybe the wife has to go, you know, a couple states over to get a job because there aren't opportunities, you know, at home.
Back in the 60s, my dad worked for IBM, you know, and they relocated him, you know, every other year. And we spent 1 year with my dad in Syracuse, and we were in Binghamton, New York. And my mother really describes that as a devastating time. I mean, they weren't going to break up, but it was very stressful.
It's difficult. One of the things that Jason and Amanda talked about, though, that I liked was I asked him, what do you do when your partner's not there? And Jason immediately said, I eat barbecue. She doesn't like barbecue. That's what I do. I get to listen to Steely Dan when she's not there. So that's the other flip side of having a little time apart from your husband or wife. You get to have a little me time.
Does FaceTime enter in here? I mean, this technology, I find that it's more painful sometimes to do the face-to-face hookup, even as great as it is. It's really fantastic for the kids to see mom when she's out of town. But I'm wondering if technology helps or hurts here.
Well, as most things with technology, it's both. You could look at your partner 3,000 miles away. But the other thing that Amanda and Jason brought up that I hadn't really thought about was the other side of technology is there's so many other ways that other people can contact you without your partner having a sense of it, you know, whether it's a text or an email. That's something that has been something they've had to talk about is what's happening on your phone while you're on the road as well.
Everybody talks about that now. Yeah. I mean, it's the toxic waste of American relationships, it's the digital technology.
Jason said there's so many country music songs about, you know, a wife picking up the phone and nobody calling and nobody being on the other end. And he's like, there aren't those songs anymore because we all have so many other ways to reach each other.
I have a marriage counselor who used to say that in the last 10 years, his entire business has become dealing with phone message issues and text and Facebook message issues.
Huh.
It's gone from never to that's all he does.
That's the practice. That's interesting.
Well, how about you?
It's something I've thought about a lot because my boyfriend is often in the field as an ecologist. And so, you know, with FaceTime, there's sometimes you can trick yourself into feeling like you can still feel like you're in each other's daily lives. But when you're in very different places, it is different. And so then the calculation is how often do we need to see each other to feel like we're connected? For Jason and Amanda, they said they just feel like every 3 weeks they have to make sure they see each other. There's some kind of visit. And that wasn't scientific. That was mostly from surveying other musicians in Nashville to see what they were told about the ways to have a healthy relationship. And the 3-week rule seemed to be something they were taught.
And if you need to talk about your long-distance relationship, you can talk to Anna Sale.
That's what we're learning in this podcast.
Anyone can talk to Anna Sale, host of the new podcast, Death, Sex, and Money. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.